This is VOA News, reporting by remote. I'm Joe Ramsey. Millions of Americans could soon find themselves homeless as a nationwide ban on evictions expires Sunday against a backdrop of surging coronavirus cases and political finger-pointing. With billions in government funds meant to help renters still untapped, President Joe Biden this week urged Congress to extend the 11-month-old moratorium after a recent Supreme Court ruling meant the White House could not do so. But Republicans balked at Democratic efforts to extend the eviction ban through mid-October, and the House of Representatives adjourned for its summer vacation Friday without renewing it. Several progressive Democrats spent the night outside the U.S. Capitol in protest, calling out their colleagues over the failure to act. Researchers claim government protections have prevented an estimated 2.2 million eviction filings since March 2020. Tokyo officials said Saturday newly reported COVID-19 cases in the Olympic host city surged to a record high of 4,058 on Saturday, exceeding 4,000 for the first time and overshadowing the games. Public broadcaster NHK says nationwide cases topped 12,000, the highest ever for Japan, and up 15% on the day, underscoring a rapid rise in infections across the country. The new records come a day after Japan decided to extend and expand states of emergency to the end of August. Olympics organizers said Saturday they had revoked accreditation of a games-related person or people for leaving the athlete's village for sightseeing, a violation of measures imposed to hold the Olympics safely amid the pandemic. Kyoto News Agency reports it was two male judo silver medalists from Georgia who had their credentials revoked. There was a media report in Japan that the two had been witnessed near Tokyo Tower on Tuesday night. This is VOA News. Malaysia's embattled prime minister on Saturday postponed a critical parliamentary session set for Monday, citing COVID-19 infections and allowing him to avoid a no-confidence vote amid growing calls for him to resign. Lawmakers have been told the session will be held at a later date, after the health ministry deemed parliament a high-risk venue. 11 cases were detected Thursday among staff and others. Malaysia's political crisis deepened when the king rebuked the government for misleading parliament on the status of ordinances it used during the coronavirus state of emergency. The opposition, which has filed a motion of no confidence against the prime minister, slams the postponement as an excuse for him to stay in office. This is not the first time he has suspended parliament in Malaysia due to the virus. It was shut down for several months just after he took office in March 2020, and since January this year, after the king approved his plan for an emergency to tackle the pandemic. Four of the world's most prominent health, trade, and financial organizations on Saturday implored COVID-19 vaccine manufacturers to make doses for four countries a priority to combat the, quote, acute and alarming shortage. A joint statement by the heads of the World Health Organization, World Trade Organization, International Monetary Fund, and World Bank also said countries which have progressed far in vaccinating against the disease should release doses in favor of less fortunate nations. The leaders said vaccine delivery contracts for poorer nations were being delayed, with less than 5% of purchased doses having been delivered. They're calling on governments to reduce or eliminate barriers to the export of vaccines and all materials involved in producing them, and said there was an urgent need to tackle supply chain bottlenecks. In countries deemed as high income by the World Bank, 98 doses per 100 people have been injected. That figure drops to 2 per 100 in the lowest 29 income countries. The United Nations climate chief said Saturday a group of mostly smaller countries submitted new but more ambitious climate pledges to the UN this week, raising pressure on big emitters, including China, to do the same ahead of a major climate summit in November. She says the United Nations has now received new pledges from 110 countries out of the nearly 200 that signed the 2015 Paris Climate Accord. A total of 15 countries, most of them small and with relatively low CO2 emissions, submitted new pledges this week ahead of a July 30th deadline. They include Sri Lanka, Israel, Malawi, and Barbados, while Malaysia, Nigeria, and Namibia were among the larger countries to submit tougher climate targets this week. Find more at voanews.com. Reporting by remote, I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News. We'll be right back.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Douglas Impoga.
Abdelghani says it's challenging because of the previous disputes between the two ethnic groups, with the Amharic group supporting the federal government of Ethiopia in its war against the Tigrayan people.
Thousands of Ethiopian refugees flee into Sudan after the war in Ethiopia's Tigray region spreads to the neighboring Amhara region.
Yes, there are some delays in terms of burials, but not necessarily being caused by the increased number of deaths, but being caused by the increased procedures that need to be satisfied before a body is finally disposed of.
In Zimbabwe, burials turn into super spreader events and cause delays in funeral services.
But I'm happy because I'm back in my country. It has been a difficult time. You know, the life I get when I travel down to Libya, I get to know that this world is not the way we think it is. People were being raped, people were being killed.
And Nigeria is marking this year's World Day Against Human Trafficking with a march in the capital to raise awareness on the issue. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Authorities in Sudan say at least 3,000 Ethiopian refugees fled into Sudan this week after the war in Ethiopia's Tigray region spread to the neighboring Amhara region. Naba Muhaddin speaks to a refugee camp director and a political analyst about the significance of the influx in this report from Khartoum.
Sudanese authorities reported thousands of Ethiopian refugees crossing the border this week. In a phone interview with VOA, the head of Al-Gadarif Emergency Committee handling refugee camps, Al-Fatih Mugaddam, said the registered number of the new asylum seekers is 1,058. Mugaddam says the camps will struggle to absorb so many refugees, and he asked the Sudanese government and aid groups to quickly intervene. The majority of the new refugees fled from Ethiopia's Amharic region, bordering war-torn Tigray and the conflicted Al-Fashaga region between Sudan and Ethiopia. The war erupted in Ethiopia last November between the federal government in Ethiopia and the Tigray People's Liberation Front, after Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed accused Tigrayan troops of attacking federal military camps. The war in Ethiopia has caused a devastating humanitarian crisis, mostly in the Tigray region. Humanitarian aid agencies like the United Nations World Food Programme, WFP, say more than 5 million people in the Tigray region are in urgent need of food aid. About 60,000 Ethiopians have fled to Sudan and are camping in the eastern cities bordering Ethiopia. Sudanese analysts like Ahmed Abdelghani warn the influx from the Amhara region might lead to tensions between Amharans and Tigrayans in the camps. Abdelghani says it's challenging because of the previous disputes between the two ethnic groups, with the Amharic group supporting the federal government of Ethiopia in its war against the Tigrayan people. He adds that receiving the new refugees in the same camps may cost Sudan a lot if the government didn't conduct security procedures to avoid any breakdown between the battling groups. The conflict in the Tigray region has worsened the already troubled relationship between Sudan and Ethiopia. The countries have engaged in a years-long dispute about Ethiopia's massive hydroelectric Gerd Dam, which Sudan and Egypt fear will cut off their access to adequate water from the Nile River. The Ethiopia government announced updated plans Tuesday for electricity generation from the dam after the second phase filling of the dam ended this month. Neba Muhiddin for VOA News, Khartoum, Sudan.
COVID-19 cases on the rise, death is breeding more deaths in Zimbabwe, with burials turning into super spreader events and causing delays in funeral services. Reporter Kuzai Vinavashe has more details.
Dalvin Humwe is a Harare resident who recently lost his grandmother to the pandemic. He says the burial did not go smoothly.
We're being told that the funeral parlor was having challenges to avail enough vehicles to transport the bodies. So in our case, we endured a 4-hour delay before they managed to get us a vehicle to carry the body out of Harare, where we were due to bury our relative.
Funerals, vaccination centers, and long bank queues have become potential super spreaders. What's more, he says, funeral businesses are struggling to meet demand for their services.
One of the employees actually told us that they were being overwhelmed because they were used to service about 100 bodies on an average account. But now they were getting as many as 300 bodies per day. So they were kind of overwhelmed by the development.
Taka Soswe is general manager at Zimbabwe Association of Funeral Assurers. He says their members are coping well despite the challenges.
We have not yet received serious reports from our members pointing to an overwhelming situation where members are being overwhelmed by burials. While we understand that the numbers from COVID have been increasing in the last few days, but we have not yet received any alarm from our members.
Sosa acknowledges the delays, but does not link it to being overwhelmed.
What we know is, yes, there are some delays in terms of burials, but not necessarily being caused by the increased number of deaths, but being caused by the increased procedures that need to be satisfied before a body is finally disposed of, like the requirement for COVID tests and results before the body is finally taken to final resting place. That's somehow delayed the process.
Critics say it may be difficult for funeral services to admit to being overwhelmed, since that may discourage customers. The demand for service is brisk, and high demand brings high profits. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zhinavashe from Harare.
The impact of the coronavirus pandemic has stretched people's mental health around the globe, and Zimbabwe is no exception. But some Zimbabweans hit hard by the stress have found unique support at the Friendship Bench, one of the country's biggest counseling services. Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare.
The Friendship Bench was created in 2006 to provide counseling to those stressed out or depressed by the political and economic situation in Zimbabwe. The organization now has branches at most clinics and hospitals in Harare, and it is the only large mental health therapy service operating in the country. The service is run by volunteers who say they do not want to see Zimbabwean people experience severe anxiety. According to Chengetai Nyamkapa, the country coordinator for Friendship Bench, many people have stopped meeting others in person due to COVID-19.
As Friendship Bench, we are saying that we are there. We continue to provide counseling to people who are affected, who are infected by the COVID-19 pandemic. And again, we are saying that we are not able to do that using our conventional face-to-face. But what we have done as an organization is to migrate to an online platform. And on this online platform, we are accessible via WhatsApp, be it an audio call, be it a video call, be it texting, even a general call.
But some, such as Elizabeth Chibeka, still come to their offices. The 49-year-old says her father is battling with COVID-19. She says, I have nothing to pay for his medical bills. I am unemployed. I have no means to raise funds, even for his food. Those are some of the things stressing me. Hence, I came here to talk to these people. COVID is there and it's real, especially where we stay. We are failing to attend funerals because of COVID-19. 53-year-old Forget Gutuzam is one of the counselors at the Friendship Bench. She says COVID-19 is dominating her counseling lately. Gutuza says COVID-19 has really spread its wings. It's all over, but people are not masking up. I do not know how awareness programs can be done. I wonder why people do not understand the situation we are in. My neighbor conducts church service nearly every day. You tend to wonder how you can help them people. Dr. Deborah Machado is the chief of mental health for the World Health Organization's office in Zimbabwe. She says COVID-19 has caused a lot of stress.
Lately, we've been seeing a number of psychological disorders, including panic attacks, insomnia, depression, and also a surge in terms of family conflicts and violence. So there are a number of things that people can actually do to mitigate loss of income, to mitigate the stress that comes. So the first thing is to understand, to appreciate that we are living in very strange times and that things are difficult. When people understand, it means they are also going to put their expectations into perspective.
This realization might help people to cope, like Chibeka, as the number of cases of COVID-19 continue to spike in Zimbabwe with the Delta variant on the rise. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare, Zimbabwe.
Nigeria is marking this year's World Day Against Human Trafficking with a march in the capital to raise awareness of the issue. The United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime says Nigeria is a major source, a transit and destination country in Africa for human trafficking, but has a poor conviction rate for those arrested. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
Some 200 participants, including officials, partners, non-profit organizations, and victims of human trafficking, took part in the Abuja Awareness March Thursday. It was part of the week's activities ahead of the World Day Against Human Trafficking, July 30. Human trafficking victim Yetunde Abraham was among those marching.
But I'm happy because I'm back in my country. It has been a difficult time. You know, the life I get when I travel down to Libya, I get to know that this world is not the way we think it is. People were being raped. People were being killed. People were being shot a lot that I cannot even be able to tell her.
Like thousands of victims trafficked each year, Abraham was tricked by a close relative with a juicy offer in Germany. She succumbed to the bait and was trafficked to Libya for prostitution in order to make money for her traffickers. She was there for 6 years. The United Nations says Nigeria remains a source, transit, and destination country for human trafficking in Africa. To address this problem, Nigerian authorities set up a National Agency for the Prohibition of Trafficking in Persons, NAPTIP, in 2003. NAPTIP has rescued over 17,000 victims and convicted some 550 offenders, a very low percentage compared to incidents of the crime. NAPTIP's Public Enlightenment Officer, Josiah Emirole, explains why conviction is not so easy.
The issue of poor prosecution is not just a Nigerian thing. Like I told you earlier, trafficking is a clandestine crime, and you must prove that such a crime has been committed. You must present the victim who has been exploited, and the victim has to be ready to face the judge to say, yes, it happened to me.
Emmanuel Gabriel, who founded Symbols of Hope, a non-profit helping trafficked victims like Abraham rebuild their lives, says authorities must improve their record of prosecution.
I think it's a very, very poor number. It's high time we wake up and stop deceiving ourselves. Let's face the reality. Today, if you don't give justice to the survivors of human trafficking, tomorrow it will be your own son or your own daughter.
There are at least 1.4 million victims of human trafficking living under coercion, exploitation, and humiliation in Nigeria, according to the International Organization for Migration. Authorities say those who are speaking up, such as Yetunde Abraham, are instrumental in developing and implementing measures against perpetrators. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
Some Nigerian companies are using coconut and palm shells to make charcoal briquettes in an effort to slow ongoing deforestation. Nigeria banned charcoal exports after a World Bank report showed the country lost nearly half its forest cover in just a decade. Timothy Biezu reports from Kuje, Nigeria.
This is the sound of coconut shells being sorted before they are thrown into a pot for burning. Nothing goes to waste at this coconut processing facility started by Emeka Ugweje 10 years ago outside Abuja.
We began thinking it was to say, okay, let our waste become the necessary energy to make fire. And this is where we have come.
The shells burn for about an hour before turning from brown to a carbon-rich black derivative. They are cooled, ground, and later manually molded into briquettes. But Ugweje says there's a plan to scale up mechanically.
We intend to introduce several types of machines. Few amongst them is the molder, the cutter, and the drying system, a dehydrator that will bring these briquettes into a more solid form.
Ugweje's company, SFK Coconut, which makes products made from coconut, is one of many in Nigeria using coconut briquettes as fuel in place of wood charcoal. Experts say Nigeria's huge charcoal market causes major environmental repercussions. Charcoal from here is mostly exported to Europe and the United States. A 2017 World Bank report showed Nigeria lost nearly half of its forest cover between 2007 and 2017 as a result of charcoal trade. The report also predicted Nigeria's forests could be completely gone by 2047. Conservationist David Michael Terungwa, executive director of the Global Initiative for Food Security and Ecosystem Preservation, says a lack of compliance with Nigeria's charcoal export ban is to blame for continued deforestation.
There is a lack of political will to end this practice in Nigeria. Even before the World Bank report of 2017, it is in our acts, the NESRA acts of 2014, banning the production and export of charcoal in Nigeria. But I think the issue is compliance and compliance monitoring and enforcement by the regulatory agency.
For years, Nigerian authorities have been encouraging tree planting to replace decimated forests. But experts say in the absence of adequate monitoring systems, Nigerians must make a conscious effort to use other alternatives to tree-derived charcoal for fuel. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Kuje, Nigeria.
Cameroon's government has sent ministers to its northern border with Nigeria to convince villagers who fled Boko Haram militants to return. Cameroon invested $10 million on reconstruction efforts after damage caused by the Islamist terrorist group in some villages. But as Moki Edwin Kinzika reports from Morija in northern Cameroon, many villagers are reluctant to go home, and authorities acknowledge the militants are still a threat.
Bulldozers of Cameroon's Ministry of Public Works filled destroyed portions of the 30-kilometer road linking Cameroon's northern town of Mora to Banki, a town in northeast Nigeria. Celestine Ketchakutes, Cameroon's Minister of Housing and Urban Development, and Talba Mala Ibrahim, Minister of Public Contracts, traveled to the site this week. Kutes says they went to find out the effectiveness of reconstruction work on infrastructure damaged during fighting by Cameroonian troops and Boko Haram combatants.
Nous avons visité deux importants points de franchissement. Les dalles instruits par le
chef. She says Cameroonian President Paul Biya instructed her and the Minister of Public Contracts to visit markets rebuilt to facilitate the purchase and sale of goods, cattle, table beds and food. She says they also saw routes built to ease travel between Cameroon and Nigeria and to facilitate trade between the two neighbors. She says Cameroon's government is planning to rebuild infrastructure destroyed by the jihadist militant group Boko Haram. Cameroon said the $10 million was invested this year for reconstruction of schools, hospitals, and markets destroyed by Boko Haram. Alamin Usman May is the Minister of Economy. He says civilians who fled can return and occupy infrastructure that has been reconstructed.
It started with the reconstruction of be it police as well as custom administrative facilities. It has gone further to train those involved in protecting the population and also the community to be part of the stabilization process. It's about bringing back economic life.
May acknowledged Boko Haram is still a threat. He said civilians should return as the military will protect people to help in the development of their towns and villages. But this week, Cameroon reported two Boko Haram deadly attacks that claimed the lives of 13 troops and civilians in the border villages of Sangme and Zigi. The latest attack was in Zigi on Tuesday. Authorities say 5 troops and 6 civilians were killed. Cameroon said several hundred civilians fled the two villages. There has been no comment from Nigeria, but a multinational joint task force established by Lake Chad Basin countries to combat Boko Haram consists of troops from Nigeria, Cameroon, Benin, Niger, and Chad. The troops, which have a base in Mora, are posted along Cameroon's border with Nigeria. Grigory Bonglam is a teacher. He says on Tuesday he fled Mozogo, a northern administrative unit on the border with Nigeria, after yet another Boko Haram attack.
You never can identify who is Boko Haram and who is not. We were just sitting outside and discussing. Little did we know that Boko Haram was around, and before we know it, they were already explosive. Luckily that we are a little bit far from the incident. Otherwise, we would have been killed. Going back there is really very dangerous.
Philemon Dula, conflict resolution specialist with the Cameroon NGO Trauma Center, says Cameroon should ensure there is peace before reconstruction.
What I would suggest for the government is to talk about recovery. In recovery, there is the physical aspect of building the schools, building the houses, building the hospitals, and so on. So that is why I am saying that reconstruction is just a starting point. The psychological aspect is actually the heart of the matter. People can only go out to do their businesses, to go to their farms, when they have that minimum security.
Cameroon says security will improve if civilians collaborate with authorities and report to authorities if they see suspicious activities in towns and villages. The government is also asking for the creation of militias to assist the military fight Boko Haram. Boko Haram has been fighting for 11 years to create an Islamic caliphate in northeast Nigeria and parts of Cameroon, Chad, Niger, and Benin. The violence has cost the lives of 30,000 people and displaced about 2 million civilians, according to the United Nations. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Marua, Northern Cameroon.
Relax, unwind, or charge up? Then listen to Music Time in Africa this weekend. It'll do all that for you and more. I'm Heather Maxwell. I know good music, and Africa is my passion. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for 1 hour of commercial-free Pan-African music of the highest caliber. You get great music, music news, and amazing artist interviews from rising stars to superstars. This listen will take you places. So do it. Join me for Music Time in Africa, your weekend destination.
This is the Voice of America in Washington, and you're listening to Nightline Africa. And see you to come in the program, our Saturday music spot from our collection of music from across the continent. But first,
rights groups have condemned Eswatini's arrest of two lawmakers this week and the use of force against pro-democracy protesters. The Southern African Kingdom, Africa's last absolute monarchy, has been rocked by protests since June. Linda Givatash reports from Johannesburg.
Protests reignited Thursday in Eswatini, previously known as Swaziland, as two pro-democracy members of parliament appeared in court. Mtandani Dube and Mduduzi Mabuza were arrested earlier this week on charges of terrorism for inciting unrest and violating COVID-19 regulations. The unrest began over a month ago with protests calling for political reform. 25-year-old Vusia Maseko is a member of the Swaziland National Union of Students, which is among the central groups leading the demonstrations. He says the arrest exemplified the lack of freedom in the country.
Indeed, it is angering. It's enraging because these are the people's representatives in parliament. They are the voices of the voiceless, and arresting them means government is shutting 1.1 million voices, the population of Swaziland.
Weeks of demonstration have cost the landlocked country's economy at least $200 million. They've also cost lives. Local police have confirmed over 30 people have been killed and many more arrested. International organizations and governments have condemned the response by authorities, calling the use of force excessive. Amnesty International spokesperson Robert Chivambu says the lawmakers should be released immediately.
They have committed no crime and have been targeted by the government solely for their political views. We believe that both MPs are victims of political witch hunt, which is designed to silence any critical voice that is demanding political reforms and human rights.
Government spokesperson Sabelo Lameini declined to comment in response to the condemnation. Instead, he deferred to Prime Minister Klepis Dlamini's parliamentary address on Wednesday, in which he vehemently denied political motivation for the lawmakers' arrest. But the Prime Minister said the rule of law would also be upheld and applied to anyone who incited violence under the guise of free expression. Until the government meets with the public for peaceful negotiations, Amnesty International spokesperson Robert Chivambu says more episodes of violence are feared.
The government thinks that the only way to respond to these protests is crackdown that we have seen. They've deployed the police and the army to crack down on dissent. So we are concerned that things could escalate.
The international support is welcomed by student protesters like Maseko, but members from the United Eswatini diaspora say they want to see more than just talk from the international community. Kwakazi Kamolo says they want countries from neighboring South Africa to other global powerhouses to halt business with the government.
We're calling for sanctions of all Swaziland products, particularly those that Mswati is a business shareholder in. And those are some of the things that the world has authority, you know, to do.
The jailed members of parliament remain behind bars after a judge deferred a decision to grant them bail at a Thursday hearing. A new date for a ruling has yet to be announced. Linda Giftash for VOA News, Johannesburg.
It's now time for our Saturday music spot. Yes, time to relax and enjoy great African music.
Instrument, come wind to this waist, oh. The way you dance to this beat like bolingo. Two step that a zone, two step that a zone. Kata, kata, wait, kata, moto, moto. The way you dance to this beat like bolingo. Two step that a zone, two step that a zone. Kata, kata, wait, kata, moto, moto. Kata, kata, wait, kata, moto, moto. Five nation and we be global. Only hang with my kings and we know boo. Yahoo boys, yahoo, if you don't know them. I'm searching for someone to be my gem. A princess to queen, pre for newbie. And get me a family and need before we begin. So come and dance on my hog, call it swing, bro. The way you move it, I go lose my lingo. Got me vibing to this instrument, come wind to this whistle. The way you dance to this beat like bolingo. Two step that us on two step. Kata, kata, wait, kata, moto, moto. Kata, kata, wait, kata, moto, moto. See, I like how you want in slow motion. Kata, moto, moto. Oh, but you never mind them.
girls on my line who want me to die, and they see how you smile and want the sensation. Subira, subira, be my patience. For you, Faji Faz, be the occasion. I got a garden of those, but we don't name them. As far as the flows, I be brainstorming, then I'm storm braining on the beat for it, cause she ain't boring. And you know how it go when I start soaring. I'm humble but saucy, you just know when I step in the vibe, it be 2 double 5. So dab me up twice, cause the love never dies.
Come and dance on my hawk on the swing, go. The way you move it, I go lose my lingo. Got me vibing to this instrument, come wind to this whistle. The way you dance to this beat like bolingos. Two step, that's on two steps. Kata, kata wait, kata moto moto. Kata, kata wee, kata moto moto. Kata, kata wee, kata moto moto. Kata, kata we, kata mwanangu kata. Kiuno chako mwenyewe, wala ukuazima ka. Kata, kata we, kata mwanangu kata. Kiuno chako mwenyewe, wala ukuazima ka. Kata, katika sister kata. Kata, kata, kata mwanangu kata. Come and dance on my hawk on the swing, go. The way you move it, I go lose my lingo. Got me vibing to this instrument, come on to this whistle. The way you dance to this beat like bolingo. Two step datas on, two step datas on. Kata, kata, wait, kata moto moto. The way you dance to this beat like bolingo. Two step datas on, two step datas on. Kata, kata, wait, kata moto moto. Kata, kata, wee, kata moto moto. Kata, kata, wee, kata moto moto.
Lance Kareem.
I don't know what.
make you hold me, girl. Give me love, make you give me well. Mi corazón, please don't let go, come close, make you hold me, girl. Give me love, make you give me well, no.
To be with you,
where I go.
was our Saturday Music Spot. I sincerely hope you enjoyed the music. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America and from the rest of the Nightline Africa team. We thank you for joining us tonight. And join us tomorrow, Sunday. I'm Douglas Mpoga.